You are now listening to the Social Chemist Podcast. On today's episode, I am joined by Sam van Draga to discuss about the events that occurred in January 6, 2021, at Capitol Hill, when pro-Trump supporters stormed in and created havoc as the United States watched in horror, witnessing the danger of the conspiratorial right. Sam gives his take about what he saw in the future of the Republican Party. We touch upon how America is viewed in the international arena, and our thoughts on President-elect Joe Biden, and much more. I hope you enjoy today's episode and get an insight in one of the most intellectual people I know. Sam is a political juggernaut, and as you hear him articulate his thoughts, you'll see what I mean. So with that being said, let's get started. And remember, question everything with logic. You are now listening to the Social Chemist Podcast. I am your host, Nelson Perez, and it is January 7th, 2021. We are a week into the year, and shit's already gone crazy. Dr. Dre has suffered from a brain aneurysm. Kanye West and Kim Kardashian are getting a divorce. And Capitol Hill was, in better words, invaded by so-called patriots. Today, I am joined by my good friend, Sam. If you guys are listeners of the program, you guys know that he was with me during the presidential election discussion. And Sam is one of the few people that I can trust when it comes to his political expertise, you know, knows a lot more about politics than I do. So thank you for joining me, Sam.
Yeah, thank you for having me on. And thank you for gassing me up on my political experience.
I got to call it out for what it is. But yeah, I kind of knew yesterday, like January 6th was going to be a special day for Republicans, but didn't think it was going to go exactly how it went. People hanging from the ceilings, breaking in, pretty wild stuff. You know, I thought it was just going to, we were going to laugh about it and be like, oh, look, that's adorable. And it ended up being quite a historical event. I think 100 years from now, our grandchildren are going to look back and say like, shit, what the fuck happened? And so, yeah,
this is a whole chapter for future history textbooks.
Yeah, and exactly.
I got to give you credit, Nelson. The last time we spoke for the Election Day podcast, you asked me if I thought there'd be violence, and I immediately said no. You said there might be. There wasn't on Election Day, but here we are 2 months later, exactly 2 months later, actually, right? And more than I ever imagined happened.
I imagined violence after the election. I thought, like I said, I thought this was going to be more of a like, we're not going to accept, obviously, you know, Donald Trump, even after they went in and they pretty much, I guess, invade is the proper word. I don't know if I'm using it correctly, but that's what it sounds like to me. And he spoke to the these, I guess, domestic terrorists, called them for what they are.
100%.
And said, look, we need to be peaceful, but this election has been stolen from us. Not the best message for a U.S. president to tell his followers. And I guess in a sense, he justified it.
I mean, telling them that he loves them and that they're special was, you know, compared to what he said in June when he tweeted, when the looting starts, the shooting starts, right?
Yeah. And so one of my questions I want to ask you is, what is the state of the Republican Party? Because I've always said that the Democratic Party is separated. Mm-hmm. And we have, you know, the progressives that we are regarded as like socialists, communists, depending who you ask. And then we have moderate Democrats. And there's always that friction between the two inside the party. It's pretty obvious. You know, I'm not satisfied with Biden as our Democratic president. I definitely would have preferred Bernie Sanders. However, when it came to the Republicans, I always thought that they were unified because they only had three things that they were concerned about. Guns, abortion, and capitalism. Yeah. That's really the three big things, right? It's very simplistic, and they were unified in that. However, now that we've seen a few Republicans go against Donald Trump, they're losing control. They've gone after Mitt Romney. They've gone after Mitch McConnell, and they're going after Mike Pence. They thought Mike Pence was going to somehow overturn the election.
They were hunting for Pence yesterday inside the Capitol building.
Yeah, and so do you think that Donald Trump can run another campaign in 2024 and be successful, not taking consideration his age?
If you asked me 24 hours ago, I would have said yes. Now I'm not so sure. we have to ask ourselves, is the RNC even going to back him? Are other Republican senators and other Republican governors who have already called for him to be removed going to back him? And I mean, maybe it doesn't matter to the voter, to Trump's base, but it'd be tougher for him to get reelected in 2024 than it was in 2016.
Because he wouldn't have the support of the RNC, or because he just wouldn't have...
Not only the support of the RNC, because he didn't have it much in 2016, but he did lose some of the base, and he's also losing congressmen and governors who did stand by his side.
Because I feel like Trump has a very good chance of running a 2024 campaign solely mm-hmm. because Trump represents, quote unquote, the people. Mm-hmm. He declares himself a self-made billionaire. And when you think of people like Mitt Romney, those are more of established Republicans, people that middle-class Republicans would call rhinos. I don't know. That's a term that I've seen them use. And
it's a tough call to make because in Washington, they're still very much prevalent, but in, you know, throughout America and Trump's voter base, it's hard to tell in terms of will they back Trump again versus an establishment Romney type.
It's going to be very interesting what happens in 2024. The only reason why I don't think he'll run again because of his age, the job is too stressful. Who knows if he enjoys it? I think he likes the attention, you know, he likes the feeling of winning.
He likes being in power. He doesn't like actual governing.
Yeah.
He doesn't like governing.
Yeah, you told us in our last discussion that they don't even like do informs, like there's like a
daily brief.
The daily brief.
They pretty much stopped that because they saw how uninterested he was.
I think they were showing him pictures and shit, like fucking goddamn. So what were your thoughts about how police reacted to the protest? There's a lot of criticism about how police officers handled the pro-Trump supporters who went into Capitol Hill compared to how Black Lives Matter, how more prepared they were when it was a Black Lives Matter movement.
So Black Lives aside, it's scary how easy people got into the Capitol building of the United States. You'd figure that regardless of whether there's protests or not, that security would be tight around an area like that. And they obviously failed. But yeah, you have to acknowledge that there was a level of white privilege that compared to Black Lives Matter, we saw, and they were just able to walk in freely and unfortunately walk out freely. Outside of being unprepared as a police department, they let their guard down because majority of those people there were, you know, white.
There was a few videos that I saw, and I think two that actually caught my attention, three, one of them being her name is Ashley Abbott. Mm-hmm. She was fatally shot during the siege. There was one where a Black police officer, and you see him trying to like tell, you know, Trump supporters to stop, to move back.
This is the guy being chased up the stairs, right?
Yeah, the guy, he's being chased up the stairs. Yeah. And I always say that it's easy to say what he should have done because we're looking at things from a third person perspective.
Yeah.
We're not experiencing things in real time. If he were to have shot the person in front of him, would that have escalated the situation? Or do you think that what he did was a proper response?
I mean, from a policing point of view, as someone who wants reform, I'm glad that regardless of what their political opinion was, that no one was hurt. I do think it would have escalated the situation. They would have turned against the police even more so than they did already.
Me and you, we always say how the Republicans, or more the pro-Trumpers, I don't want to generalize all Republicans, say that they're, you know, Blue Lives Matter, the party of law and order, but only when it doesn't apply to them.
Right. And I mean, the majority of them don't care about blue lives. They just want it to be anti-Black.
Yeah, that's pretty much what it is. I've got to be honest. There's not really, you know, if it was for that, they would have respected the law enforcement. But that being said, there were some questionable things that were recorded. One of them was one of the rioters took a picture with one of the police officers, and that gives a mixed signal to the Black community. Like, whose side are you on? Like, you're not supposed to have a side. You're supposed to call it out for what it is.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah. I can't believe that he did that inside the Capitol building in such a crazy moment. You know, if this were outside, obviously it would have been frowned upon. But being inside the Capitol building, that blew my mind.
Yeah, no, it was, again, I was not expecting this to, and yeah, we were talking, you were like sending us, you know, messages, and I'm here thinking like, oh, you know, you're just pushing them back. But no, like this was actual, it was a historical day in America. I've received two letters from Kane and Rutgers talking about, you know, what occurred, how this was an attack on democracy. But one of the things that I always find fascinating about these types of events is how people respond to them. And how people perceive these type of social events. I've called it out I'm consistent when it comes to riots. You know, I was not a fan when certain Black Lives Matter movements were burning down, you know, businesses. I was totally against that. And I'm totally against what occurred yesterday. Mm-hmm. However, Republicans tend to view this as patriotic. When Republicans, when right-wingers protest, it's viewed as, you know, this is American. This, we're patriots. However, yeah. When it's a left-wing movement, suddenly, you know, it's an existential threat.
Just like how you alluded to before, the party of law and order, when it doesn't apply to them. So they view themselves as the exception, maybe because they're white. And going back to what you said about the Black Lives Rights, obviously we don't condone burning down a Target or small businesses. But you have to admit that storming the Capitol building and threatening to kidnap politicians is on an entirely different level too, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
It has a different level of severity, especially when it's enticed by the president.
Yeah.
If this were a couple people acting on by themselves, then it'd be bad, but you know, you could just rule it off as some psychos on the internet. But when it's the president telling you to do it, that's what's concerning.
Do you think that Trump is going to have a lasting effect inside the Republican base?
Yes, wholeheartedly, yeah.
In what way? Like, let's say Mitt Romney runs for president, and or any Republican establishment, if my question makes sense.
Yeah. It's strange because when it comes down to ideology, it's not super different, right? They're still Republican, they're still conservative. I'd say 90% of what they believe is similar, with the exception of maybe like how they look at races. But what they care about is the aesthetic, the making sure that you're always backing Trump. It's not about ideology. It's about the aesthetics of backing Trump, the optics of it.
What do you mean by the...
So, for example, let's take a look at Ted Cruz, who's kind of an establishment Republican. Mm-hmm. He pulled what he pulled yesterday because he wanted to get Trump's base. He wanted the optics of, yeah, I got Trump's back. So when he runs in 2024, he could get Trump's base to vote for him. Then you have Mitt Romney, who, again, not super ideologically different from Ted Cruz, but took a stand against what was going on. And he knows he's not going to go anywhere if he runs for president.
And then that goes back to my question. You know, if Trump were to run for 2024, like, because I don't know any middle-class Republicans that are as crazy for Trump as they are for another politician. And one of the things that I wanted to get with you is that when it comes to politics, we got to be honest, it's very complicated to follow. You know, not everyone's a political expert. No one has the time to look at the terminologies and the concepts. And yeah. So when it comes to American politics, a politician needs two essential things: to be simplistic in what they want to do and be loud about it. And I think Trump fits those perfectly. He uses language that is, you know, simplified. And I think he naturally does it because he himself doesn't know what he's talking about. And obviously he says it the loudest. And so there's that excitement. I don't see Ted Cruz and Mitt Romney and Marco Rubio and any other, you know, politician. I think the Republican base is tired of that. And I don't know how, because again, I listen to right-wing podcasters sometimes, and they're thinking about starting a third political party, which when you listen to them is exactly what a Republican Party is. They want a constitutionalist party. They want a party that is going to defend the Second Amendment, a party that is going to defend the word of God. Like, I don't know how that is different from the GOP.
Well, what's confusing about those guys is that some of the people who say that are against Trump because they think he's not an original conservative. And some of the people who say that are also for Trump because they think the rest of the Republicans are rhinos. Not for ideological reasons, but back to the aesthetics and the optics of it.
Yeah, no, I've yet to see any of those Republicans. I've never seen this level of excitement and enthusiasm. If George Bush was president, this wouldn't have occurred.
George wouldn't have happened with any other
Republican
politician, no. Even one who leans towards the Trump style of governing, it would have never happened. I can't imagine anyone else enticing a takeover of the Capitol building.
Yeah, and that was crazy.
For 2024, I think we can see excitement for someone like Senator Hawley and maybe Ted. I think, look, these guys are smart. They're not stupid. What they pulled yesterday in terms of trying to do what they were doing with the Arizona and Pennsylvania votes, they did it because they knew that Trump's base was watching and they want to prepare for a future run. Deep down inside, I don't think they think that the election was fraudulent, and they know that. They know better. They're just doing it for political gains.
Yeah. And so one of the things I wanted to talk about, you mentioned this yesterday in our conversation in the group chat, was how America has been demoted. And Angela Merkel commented that what she saw was a disgrace. you know, the prime minister, I think, of Canada. I think that's what they call him. Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of countries looked at what occurred yesterday and thought it was horrible. And you said that, or you had predicted back in 2014, mm-hmm. that you thought that America was going to get demoted. And so can you tell us a little bit about that? Like, what does that mean for America? And because I thought you brought some very good points.
Yeah, well, it means that we'll be less respected on the global stage. And it means that we won't get to set the agenda as much when it comes to trade, when it comes to these trade summits, when it comes to how we negotiate with China, Russia, and Eastern Europe. We already saw it from China yesterday. Chinese state media, Global Times, criticizing Nancy Pelosi and other Republican senators and congressmen, saying they always criticize the Chinese elections and look where they are now. Mm. So the U.S. always, you know, being looked at as the beacon of democracy, right? We would call out other countries when we saw that something wasn't right. But now we can't open our mouths about it because they're just going to say, look what happened in 2021.
Yeah. Are you in favor of how America is viewed as the international police? Do you think that's a role we should be playing?
So in terms of physically getting involved with other countries, no. I think any liberal shouldn't want that. But in terms of setting the agenda for the global order, yeah, we have to. I mentioned in the group chat, historically, the Europeans haven't been organized enough to set the agenda. And the alternative is China, more than likely, which we don't want for worse reasons than the U.S. being in charge.
For a person that doesn't really follow international politics, and I fall into that category, mm-hmm. how would that affect the average American? Like, in what aspect? How would they feel it?
So I think the biggest one would be trade. And we already see it with some industries in the tech industry and the automotive industry. They would give China the high tier stuff, the better things. They would look at the Chinese market and say, if that's what they want, that's what we're going to create. And America is going to get the leftovers of that.
Mm-hmm. All right. That makes sense. There was another question that I wanted to ask you about, but I forgot. Actually, yeah, now I recall. It was from a liberal perspective, how you mentioned that liberals are not that invested in international affairs compared to like social issues. And I could not agree with that anymore, because while I think Republican commentators are full of bullshit sometimes, majority of the time, they know how to speak their way. We have people like Charlie Kirk who talk with so much confidence. And I think if they were to grab an average liberal, would have a hard time discussing about international laws or, you know, international affairs, or just the complexity of, you know, domestic politics. And again, it's not easy. It's not easy. However, Republicans, I feel, and maybe I'm wrong in this observation, but I feel like they are more invested in when it comes to economic policies and international laws abroad. And I want to see if you felt the same way that I did.
Republican voter base, not necessarily. Republicans in charge, I think they do acknowledge that America has a strong presence in the world and that it should be kept. And I think liberal politicians like Obama, neoliberal politicians, acknowledge the same. My problem with it is that they end up becoming too hawkish and getting involved where we shouldn't be. But again, it goes back to setting the agenda. A lot of times leftist, and when I meant liberal, I meant like farther left people, have this kind of isolationist opinions about international affairs where we shouldn't be involved at all, as if the world is all dandy and we know that everything's going to be fair. You know, if I knew that Russia and China were going to be fair, then I wouldn't have an issue with America taking a step back. The issue is that the alternative is worse than America. You want the better ideal for us and the West in general.
Yeah. No, but my question was more for like the supporters. Are liberals, are they as informed about international affairs?
Compared to Republicans? I'd say they're about the same. I think the average person doesn't give a fuck. I'm sorry for cursing.
That's all right.
Yeah, and I think the average person sees what they see on Facebook and that's what they take away from it.
Maybe I get caught up by their whole obsession with the Constitution, because they make it seem like they can sack the whole thing. And I'll be honest with you, I haven't looked at the Constitution, but I'm pretty sure
most people haven't, don't worry.
Yeah. And so there's this idea that the Republicans, I feel like they are more informed about American politics than the average liberal. But again, this could be just...
I mean, I don't know. When I was criticizing liberals yesterday, I was criticizing more the progressive side when it comes to international affairs.
The supporters or like the leaders?
Both, actually. I think they're a little too naive on the state of the world. That's just my opinion. I'm not an expert, but I don't think the alternative Republicans know any better either.
Yeah, it's probably off for show. Because again, I see people like Charlie Kirk talking about like politics, like it's nothing. But again, I'm pretty sure that he is, for one, I know he's doing revision history. So, and two, you can.
I mean, as objective as they make it seem, they are looking at the Constitution and cherry picking it to make it fit their mold of what it should be.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. But yeah, that's really all I had to say. Who knows what's going to happen? You know, we're literally a week into 2021 and it's getting crazy. I can only imagine what, is it January 20th? Is that when Biden?
Yeah, January 20th. And can I add in something about Biden?
Sure.
Obviously, we're both progressives and we're not entirely thrilled about him. But policy aside, my biggest complaint about him is that I think he's entirely too naive about the state of the country right now. He's delusional if he doesn't think we're not divided.
Oh, yeah.
He, you know, his speech yesterday, sure, it was heartwarming, but I don't know if it's he's doing it to comfort the public or if he genuinely believes that we're not that divided. That's concerning.
Yeah, no.
Someone like Obama, another neoliberal, would acknowledge the how complicated things are right now. And I don't feel like I'm getting that from Joe Biden.
I didn't see his speech. Can you like summarize what he was trying to say?
I can't paraphrase it. I don't remember word by word, but you know, he pretty much called on Donald Trump to ease the nation. And it just had this general sense of like, things aren't that bad. Once I'm in there, it'll be okay. You know,
bugging.
The whole battle for the soul of the nation thing he's always said.
Yeah,
I just
no.
don't think he realizes how divided we are. And you can't solve the problem if you ignore it or if you don't know it's there.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with that. We're not united in any shape or form. Like we literally need to change our name from the Divided States of America because that's literally what we are. And no, I don't think
you can go in there thinking it's still 1994 and you could be kind of chummy with people across the aisle. But when you have guys like Senator Hawley and Cruz trying to overturn an election, you know, can you be friendly with guys like that?
Yeah, you know, I think that's one of the criticism that Kyle Kalinske from Secular Talk threw at him, that he's trying to be bipartisan and you just can't do that anymore. Like, fuck what the Republicans think. Like, no, you got to be.
They're going to call you a socialist anyways. Just do what you want to do.
Yeah. Anyway. What is with that? What is with calling Biden a fucking socialist? He is not by any stretch of the imagination. The man literally said during his last debate with Bernie Sanders, people don't want change. Like, what? I'm still astonished how no one caught that. Like, really? How do you say that during a presidential?
Yeah, that was.
We want fucking change. Like, get the fuck out of here. We're, you know, student debt is at trillions, I believe. People are dying because they don't have health coverage. And you're telling the American people that they don't want change? What in the fuck? And the fact that it was just so slimy of the Democratic establishment. Like, it was just so obvious when they told Pete Buttigieg and Amy Klobuchar when they both exited just to screw over Bernie. Like, it was just so obvious. Yeah, when
it was way too obvious. And I mean, the establishment Democrats failed to realize that the reason someone like Trump got elected is because there wasn't enough change.
Yeah. And look, I'll be quite honest with you. I'm kind of surprised that Biden. Well, am I surprised? No. Because I think the only reason why Biden won was because of the pandemic. I think if you take out the pandemic, we would have had another 4 years of, you know, Trump. Because, again, like I said, people don't follow politics that much. Mm-hmm. And so it's just the simple things that they look after. I had people that leaned, you know, to the left. And they were content with Trump. Because, again, what Trump was doing wasn't really affecting their life specifically. Like, you know, they didn't feel the direct impact of it. Once the pandemic came, everything changed. You know, people were going on unemployment, people were dying. But really, when you think about it, I don't recall anything that Biden did that really attracted me. Like, he didn't get us excited as Bernie did.
You remember in the early days of the pandemic when he was kind of the presumed nominee, he pretty much hid in his basement and, you know,
that was his strategy.
Yeah, it was a good strategy because he would have fumbled it and made it worse probably.
You know how fucking pathetic that is, that type of leader. And I am not content. I was not happy when he won the election. Like, I was glad that the Trump presidency was going to come to an end, but that they were painting Biden and Harris as these like heroic leaders that were going to save us and was going to make everything better again. And we're going to go back to, you know, when everyone was united and we could all hold hands. And no, like
yesterday, I don't know what it's going to take to get back to a certain level of normalcy.
Will we ever? That is the real question.
It's kind of weird. Like, you know, obviously in the Trump age, news stories don't last long because he just does one crazy thing on top of another. But something like yesterday, it's already being like almost normalized and, you know, back to business as usual. That's weird, isn't it? Like, it makes you feel crazy, like as if a coup almost didn't happen.
You know, I think the reason why we went back to normalcy was because it just wasn't as like, look, I'm not saying that it wasn't crazy. I'm just saying that it wasn't like, oh, like Capitol Hill was on fire and, you know, there's bombs being like exploding. Like, no, they just went in there, you know, with guns. You know, someone got shot, but it wasn't like targets on fire. Like, you know, if there was more like physical damage, I think the story would have been, you know, a lot more like newsworthy for the mainstream media. But
it's almost like, you know, we become numb to like every crazy story that comes out. I thought that this would kind of draw the line, and it didn't seem like it.
It didn't, no. And just our response, as I was saying earlier, was so fascinating because now their right-wing propagandists are trying to say that, oh, Antifa infiltrated pro-Trumpers. And like, no, take responsibility for your people. Like, this was them. This is, you guys spoke about this. You know, you guys were very, very, you know, open about what you were planning to do. Talking about, oh, we're going to overthrow the government because, you know, it's not serving the people. No, you lost. So... That's it. Yeah.
I think one thing that's angered me about Republicans lately have this constant state of denial where instead of doing a little self-reflection, they just blame some other entity. You know, they get mad at themselves losing, right? And instead of saying, hey, what do we need to change about our party and our ideology? They say, no, it's fraud. Or yesterday, instead of saying, hey, yeah, we have some bad people within our ranks and we need to take care of it. No, it's Antifa, obviously.
I'm not surprised, though, because I knew that there was going to be massive conspiracy theories going around. And I don't know if you were following, but I think you sent us an article how before the election, people were attempting to blame Iran, Russia, and North Korea. And they were talking about how, oh, they were going to infiltrate, you know, the election. However, you no longer hear those stories. And I think if Biden would have lost, the, you know, Democratic side would have prepared some type of conspiracy theory. Like, oh, you know, Trump won because of, you know, outside interference. And so...
Yeah, 2016, we saw what happened with Russiagate. I don't think it was exaggerated, but I don't think it's the same level as these conspiracy theories are seen from the right. Because to a certain extent, you know, Russiagate did exist. Russia did... release propaganda and things like that might have affected the media, might have affected people's voting records. But I don't think it was to the point where it changed the outcome of the election.
Well, it's not the same only because, you know, we won, but would have Trump won during this year's election, knowing another 4 years of Trump? Because there are people, again, now I don't know how serious they were about these commitments, but a lot of progressives that I know were ready to start a civil war, and just the sentiment was there. And so I think the conspiratorial mindset exists on both sides. I just think that since Trump lost, we're getting to see their side instead of ours.
Yeah, I mean, it does exist on both sides. And I do think that these level of conspiracies exist on both sides. And I hope it's not my bias talking, but I do think it's more severe on the right, especially when it's on the physical side of showing up to, you know, Capitol Hill and threatening to overrun it. Or, you know, for example, Pizzagate a few years ago, where someone actually showed up to that pizza restaurant and shot it up. I don't think that happened on the left.
I don't see that level of commitment on the left.
But I mean, it's a little more sycophantic on the right.
Oh, definitely. No, it's pretty fucking wild. Like, yeah, like there were QAnon supporters in yesterday's invasion of Capitol Hill. And I have one of my teachers is here, you know, I love her to death, but throwing, you know, these conspiracy theories that Nancy Pelosi's son-in-law was a part of infiltrating the pro-Trump movement. Like,
yeah, I saw that.
I was like, well, what are you talking about?
I mean, they'll come up with anything so that the blame doesn't fall on their side.
Yeah, and very hypocritical from the Republican side. Like, just take responsibility. Look, I will call out Black Lives Matter when they go too far. I don't tolerate burning of any institutions that provide income for the American people. Now, it's different because it's Capitol Hill. So, you know, honestly, like, if they were to burn Capitol Hill, I would have been like, yo, yes. Like, but even then, yesterday's acts were not acceptable. And a lot of Republicans are now saying, well, okay, but what about the BLM? Look what they did during the summer.
Or you have congressmen like Matt Gaetz just straight up saying, no, I was Antifa yesterday. You know, he said that on the House floor.
Oh, it's wild how they're trying to spin this. But no, like I said, take accountability. Come on, like, we'll take accountability when it's ours. Because, again, if they don't, they're living in a world where whatever they do is absolutely correct.
I don't understand why they're thinking so short-term. Let's say they were able to overturn this election. Do they not realize that with the same precedent set in place, Democrats could do the same? Extremely short, you know, they're playing chess. I'm sorry, they're playing checkers instead of chess.
Yeah, no, that's why I was against expanding the Supreme Court, because you can
fire back on us, right?
Yeah, you can, yeah. Not in the short term, but in the long term, like, you, it's just endless. You don't know what you're playing. And so, but I want to get your thoughts on, and we spoke a little bit about this with Sergio last time. How do you feel about Facebook banning Donald Trump's account?
Yeah, I mean, when we talked about it last time, I erred on the side of caution, because I thought, how far can they go, right? Mm-hmm. But when you literally attempted to overthrow the government, I think it's justifiable to ban someone on social media.
Yeah. Yeah, I can already see a lot of the free speechers, you know, saying that, oh, this is infringing our freedom. Like, no, again.
Yeah, at this point, again, there's violence, there is acts of tyranny, essentially. I think that's justifiable to ban him. And that's a light punishment, by the way. You know, I think he deserves to face more consequences.
Do you think he'll suffer consequences after he leaves office? With all, like, the IRS and, you know, the taxation stuff, with what he's done?
Nothing severe as I'd like to see. And I think even Joe Biden would probably, like, you know, if he had the option to go after him, he'd say no, because it might set a precedent for people to go after presidents in the future, which obviously they don't want. But again, in any case, I'd be okay with that. But I think yesterday changed a lot of my opinions on how things should move forward.
It's going to be pretty interesting how the future going forward in America and American politics is going to play out. I remember when Bush left office back in 08, and we all thought, like, yo, what a fucking bag of shit. And I saw a lot of people saying no one is going to be as bad as George W. Bush. And it only took 8 years to find out that no, there could be worse. And so the question we ask now is this, you know, rock bottom for the Republican Party? Or is this the evolution of the Republican Party?
Yeah, I mean, if that's the case, they might be a dying breed. I hope that that's the case. Regardless of what happens to the Republican Party, it does change America moving forward. The president of the Council on Foreign Relations said that it's the end of the American era. And I agree with him. It goes back to what we were talking about on the world stage. We've been demoted. We're not going to be taken as seriously anymore. So whatever happens domestically, it changes how people look at us on the global stage.
Who knows what's going to happen? One thing that I wanted to talk about was dividing parties, like I mentioned earlier. Do you see that happening? Do you see, like, the Democratic Party, like the progressives leaving the Democratic Party and making their own party, and seeing the far right leave the Republican Party and making their own party and having, you know, a four-party system?
I think for people in those positions, that'd be ideal. But obviously the way the system works in the U.S., it's not going to happen. And I think if you're smart enough, you realize that you shouldn't do that, because then you lose political gain. Your goal should be to infiltrate the party you're currently in and make your ideology mainstream.
Yeah,
which I think is what the left is trying to do.
That's a good point. You know, it is quite difficult, as we have seen. The establishment in general are pretty planted. We saw this with Bernie Sanders. The only person that was successful in accomplishing that type of, you know, movement was Donald Trump inside the RNC. But,
well, I think we've been seeing that since the Tea Party days in 2008. But yeah, Donald Trump took it to this whole other level.
The last question I wanted to ask you was, how do we deal with misinformation? We spoke a little bit about this during our last podcast. But how do we address this issue? This is something that I ask everyone, because it's a huge problem now. It's a huge problem in politics, in science, and in medicine. And so, you being, you know, more of an expert than I am in politics, how do we address misinformation and disinformation?
I mean, I don't have an answer on how to solve it, but I guess we'd have to look at where the problem comes from. Social media plays a large role in it. How the business model of social media, how they're currently going, the position they're in, if it keeps going, it can't, how can I put this in the way I'm thinking? it's not good for society. It's not good for civilization. It sounds weird saying it, but it, like, I think it could lead to the downfall of humanity if it's in the, it keeps going to the current path that it is.
Yeah, it's when people say that, you know, the downfall of humanity, they, I think a lot of people are like, they don't take it as seriously, but everything has a start. It's, everything has a domino effect. And who knows, like the last few years have been pretty wild. You know, I think Trump has sped up a lot of, you know, the downfall of America.
I mean, I'll say this, I said that this is the start of the end of the American era. And I blame social media 100% alone for that.
Don't you think there's a certain accountability on people as well? Because one of the things that I theorized was that education plays a role in this. And when it comes to getting an education here in America, it's pretty expensive. The public school system really isn't the best. Now, from my experience, I don't know what your experience was like. But then trying to go to college, it's not for everyone, and some people can't afford it. Do you think the expense of obtaining an education and obtaining knowledge has backfired? The expense of it has backfired where many people have said, screw an education, I'm going to self-teach myself. Do you think that plays a role? Do you think I'm onto something?
That's actually a really good take. But it kind of implies that if you don't go to college, then you don't know better and you fall into these traps of conspiracy theories, which I don't want to say that either.
Yeah, I don't want to say that either as well, but we're seeing a lot of it. Again, politics is not an easy discipline.
I mean, I don't know, man. That's a really good take because, yeah.
Do you trust yourself educating yourself?
Well, it's the issue is that I don't trust myself. The issue is that I acknowledge that I have my own flaws and lack of knowledge, right? I have to go to an expert to seek more of whatever information I need to look for. So I think, I mean, the biggest issue might be, people who assume they know it all, right? And something on Facebook and like, yep, that's the answer. That's 100% right. I'm not going to question it. I don't blame the individual.
Yeah. I hold some accountability on the individual because, like you said, I think a lot of people think that they're experts and you don't necessarily need to have a college education. Look, I've spoken to a lot of people that didn't finish high school actually and are intelligent people. Like they, when it comes to the Black experience here in America, the way they put things into perspective are things that, again, I would have never learned because one, I myself, I'm not African American. And two, you know, I do not take specific classes for those specific social issues. Mm-hmm. But again, you do not need a college education to learn about, you know, American history and politics.
Yeah.
However, you have to acknowledge your limitation.
Yeah, exactly.
Like I said, I know politics. I know the basics of politics and, you know, a little bit more. But for example, if you were to ask me about the Georgia election, I would have no idea. I really wasn't following it. Didn't have time. But I acknowledge my limitation. And so I go to the experts and I learn. However, we don't see that.
At a certain level, I guess you can blame an individual for not realizing their own limitations. But I just feel that not only do they not acknowledge their own limitations, but because of social media, they're fed all these lies and they take it for truth. Mm-hmm. Whereas that wasn't the case before, at least not to the severe level we have now.
Yeah, with all these memes going on, and I think we need to reform how we teach our children, how parents are engaged in their child's education. Because it starts really from there. A lot of people who are disengaged, like, look, if school is not for you, it's not for you. There's no shame in it. You know, however, you cannot pretend to be a professional in a field that you have no basic training in, whether it's in science, politics, medicine, whatever the discipline may be.
I mean, like Sergio and I were telling you in the last podcast, we kind of missed the days before Trump won that we were kind of the political experts. And now everybody's one. And so when you open your mouth, they think, oh, he's just some other guy expressing his opinion. I mean, I'm not an expert, but I like to think I know a little more than the average person.
Yeah, exactly. Who knows how we're going to solve this problem? It's manifest in almost every discipline. In politics specifically, we see it with the COVID-19 vaccine.
I think an immediate short-term solution at least would be to crack down on social media. And I'll change my answer from what I said in November. Maybe it is okay to censor some things.
Yeah.
If it's deemed dangerous and irresponsible.
Definitely agree. Yeah. Well, Sam, I want to thank you for joining me today. It's always awesome to have you. Do you want to, you know, drop your plug? I know you have your own podcast.
Yes. So I say I'm on, like I said last time.
Love that.
Unfortunately, no Instagram page for it. But it is on SoundCloud if you look it up like that. Or you can follow me on Instagram and I use at SamPaulDraga9412.
All right. Guys, you got it. That's where you can follow him. You know, like I mentioned before, this guy's, he knows what he's talking about. A political expert, you know, knows more than me. You know, I'm not. But again, check him out, give him a like, and see what he has to say. So, Sam, thank you so much, and I'll see you in the group chat.
All right, thank you, man.
Take care. Thank you for listening to today's episode. If you enjoy what you heard, please subscribe to the Social Chemist Podcast. You can follow me on Instagram and Facebook at The Social Chemist. Don't forget to leave a 5-star review if you haven't already on Apple Podcast. By doing so, you help expose this podcast to people who might be interested in conspiracy theories within politics. With that being said, take care and see you next time.